I want to read, a couple of kids gave me what animal they identify with and why. So, one of them happens to be the animal that we're talking about tonight. You beast, you. And we'll put it up here. Roll the curtain back, please. Addie said, I am a raccoon. They climb trees, steal people's food, make messes. They are adorable and playful. Hey, that's fitting there, Addie. And we're going to add some things to what she said there. And we're going to talk about the raccoon. Now, the raccoon is a common animal around here. In fact, it's probably one of the most common wild animals you will see around here, but it's not mentioned in the Bible. The Bible doesn't talk about the raccoon. The raccoon is known in this part of the world as being hunted and trapped. Did I ever turn this on? I am on. Okay. I forget where I am half the time. They're known for being hunted and trapped for their fur. And you always picture the coonskin hat that Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett, by the way, neither one of them ever had a use for a coonskin hat, but that's how Hollywood depicts them, and that's what most of us think of them, wearing a coonskin hat, and both of them despise those things because they're not even a practical hat. But raccoons can live for a long time in captivity. They've been known to live well over 20 years. Now, this is interesting. Does anybody know what party Abraham Lincoln was when he ran for president? He became a Republican, but before he was a Republican, what was he? My wife already knows the answer to all these questions. I ran some of them by her already. He was a part of the, did you say it, Don? The Whig Party. In the 1800s, the Whig Party had an animal that represented their party, and it happened to be the raccoon. And that's where the derogatory remark came for talking about black people or black sympathizers as raccoons or coons. That's just kind of an interesting bit of history, and not that we ought to use terms like that, but that was the mascot in the 1800s for the Whig Party, which is an anti-slave party. I'm going to say this, don't ever trust anyone with a mask. Don't ever trust anyone. Whether we're talking about the Lone Ranger or a raccoon or somebody with a COVID-19 mask, I just don't trust them. All right? No, they're one of the things that I'm going to look at some things about a raccoon, then we're going to look at a Bible character tonight. And the first thing I think about when I think about a raccoon, now you may think about it, Addie pointed out some things about a raccoon, and some of them we'll mention tonight, but they're sneaky. They're deceitful. You know, if you see animals running from a long distance, you can generally tell by the way it trots or by the way its body moves when it runs what kind of animal it is. I find a raccoon is an interesting animal when you see it running from a distance. A deer will bounce up and down. A cat will have like a trot, or a dog will have a trot, or a coyote will have like the same trot as a dog. But a raccoon, their body just kind of... they're just like stealth. Just their little legs are moving. And everything about them is sneaky. And of course, all wild animals are very quiet in coming up to you. They run with no, what I call, extra motion. All that moves is their legs when they run. They just kind of know nothing about them. Of course, they're a nocturnal animal, which means you see them. Well, you don't see them at night. You shine a flashlight on them. In fact, their eyes have special reflectors in them. That's why their eyes are so bright. If you shine any kind of light, sometimes without even a light shining on them, you see their eyes glowing just from the moonlight. It kind of collects other light so they can see better in the evening, more so than other animals, which most mammals are generally nocturnal animals. But they have unusual eyes that give them better vision. But they're very sneaky. They're very deceitful. They love the darkness. That's a character trait about them, not necessarily one that you would want to identify with. But then, secondly, they are, I think this will change, there we go, they're ingenious. They have a great deal of initiative. They can open latches. They can get in about anything. They can get into your chicken coop. You put them in a cage, they'll figure out how to get out. How many have ever had a pet raccoon? I think I asked that the other day. We'll talk about that in a little bit. They can open just about anything you try to lock them in or out of. They can get through a hole as small as 3 to 3.5 inches in diameter. That's a little hole for that big old animal. How do they do that? I don't know. I mean, a full-size raccoon. As long as its head can fit through it, and their head, if you look at this, I should have brought a skull. I've got a skull of a raccoon up there. I should have brought that just because they're fun to look at. And I got all kinds of fun things in my office, some of them alive, some of them dead, and some of them stinky. Well, we leave them outside till they stop stinking. If that skull can fit through the hole, their whole body can fit through it somehow. I don't know how it can do it. Other than Garrett, I think he could do that too. If your head can fit through a hole, his whole body can fit through that hole. So about 3 inches is about the size of his head, and he can squeeze through anything. They, of course, walk on all fours, but they can stretch out. They can reach just about anything. Now, these aren't pictures that I took. I don't generally take pictures of raccoons. I give them lead poisoning usually. They can reach. Into things. They can get a hold of things that other animals. They have strong fingers. Those fingers, they have long and skinny fingers. They can literally take a clam shell and pry it apart. You ever try that? That's not easy to do, but they can do that with their little fingers and sticking them inside. And that's a delicacy for them. Here's something that I didn't know about raccoons. They've got a greater memory than I do. They can learn how to do something, and you can maybe have a cage that they figured out how to break into it. And they can come back as much as 3 years later, never seeing another cage, anything like that, know exactly what to do to get back in there. That's like me. Jeff shows me something on the computer. 2 days later, I have no idea what he did. But it sure looked easy when he did it. They have an amazing memory. They're very ingenious they have a great deal of initiative. They want to do something. They'll figure out a way to do it. That can be a very good quality about them. And then they are adaptive. They're opportunists. Other than man, which man is not an animal, man is created in the image of God. Evolution has said that we're mammals, or that we're animals, but we're distinct from all the rest of God's creation. But out of all of the animals, a raccoon has the most omnivore attitude. What's that mean? They're like a teenage boy. They'll eat anything. They eat meat. They eat vegetables. They have a bigger variety than any other animal. I call them a opportunivore. They eat whatever there is. And different times of year, of course, they eat whatever's in season. I've never seen a raccoon figure out how to can things yet. So whatever's in season, they will devour it. They're more flexible than any other animal when it comes to their diet. They're sweet corn robbers around here. I got a sweet corn patch. Last year I had to relocate about a dozen of them. Where you relocate them? Oh, about 2 feet underground when we're done with them. We take care of those. But when the sweet corn starts to produce its milk, just before it gets ready to eat, they'll show up and they'll strip a whole field clean. And they'll come from everywhere. They got an amazing sense of smell. They're also known, if you watch them eat, they're known for, some people say, it looks like they're washing their food. If they've got water, they're like playing with their food underwater, running it underwater in a stream. Or if they don't have water available, they're picking at the food, like picking all the dirt out of it or something. In fact, the Germans refer to a raccoon as a wash bear, because they wash their food before they eat it. They're kind of unique in that sense. They douse their food, is what we folks would usually say. Their characteristics are different than any other animal. They have some unique things about them. They're like a bear sometimes, and sometimes when I go camping in a place where black bears or brown bears, whatever, any black bears, I guess, come around, I just call them big raccoons. And raccoons are similar to bears because they they hibernate, but they don't fully hibernate. They kind of go to a sleeping stage in the wintertime, especially in the northern climates, where they kind of halfway hibernate. They're like a dog that pants because they don't sweat, but they do sweat also. So they've got some characteristics about different animals that kind of makes them hard to define, to figure out exactly what a family of animals. There's no other animal quite like them. And they can live just about anywhere. They'll find a place. They like to live in hollowed out trees or in attics or basements or crawl spaces or in old cars, whatever they can find. They are very adaptive. They can get used to anything. They have a climbing ability. If you can see their claws there. How many toes are facing forward on those paws of those raccoons? Can you see them? How many are facing forward? All five of them are facing forward. In other words, they don't have a thumb in the back. Yet they can walk up a tree using their claws to grab a hold of the tree, and they can walk down the tree the same way. How do they do that? Well, they have the ability to turn their claws completely back. Try to do that sometimes. That's hard to do. To turn their feet completely backwards when they're walking down trees so they can still hang on to the tree. They can adapt to a lot of things. They can do some very unique things. They're very adaptive, very opportunists, always looking for an opportunity. And they can get around to just about anything. They can figure out ways to do things that other animals can't figure out. Now, we're going to liken this to a person in the Bible here in a little bit. And they're mischievous and rebellious. Boy, there's something about them. They're mischievous. They can look so sweet and innocent. They're irresistibly cute. Janelle's not here, but I remember Jim years ago when they lived up in Franklin Grove. He said that he had some raccoons, and we had some stuff stored in their garage up there. And, I mean, we went to pick it up, and there was mountains of raccoon piles on top of it everywhere. And he said, oh, those things are so thick up there. And I said, maybe I ought to do something about that. He said, I did. When I went up there, and he said it was like G.I. Joe. I had a flashlight on my .22 rifle, and I went crawling up there at the nighttime, and I saw them, and I got them right. And I was ready to fire, and I thought, they're so cute, I can't do this. Look what they're doing to your house. They're tearing your house apart. But they're so irresistible. They're so cute and so innocent looking. They're mischievous. They're rebellious. You need to take care of them. I was trying to remember which one of our girls, it was a long time ago, so it was when Rachel was real little. We were at a campground. I went away, I probably went out fishing or something, went out doing something, and came back, and Carol said, oh, Rachel found a little buddy, feeding it breadcrumbs. Dumb thing to do. A little raccoon was her pet. Guess what it did that night? To the tent, to the cooler, and everything. That was ripping stuff apart, but it was so cute. Look at the little baby, right? They're not intimidated by it, right? They're so cute. I'm going to have one for a pet. They're trainable and tameable to an extent. You know, I was just trying to find a picture of somebody who had a pet raccoon without having somebody's face in it, but I found a lot of, it was kind of gross, the things that raccoons had done to people when they had them for a pet. I mean, faces torn apart, ears ripped off, noses, lips ripped completely off their face by their cute little pet raccoon. They're trainable to an extent, but they're going to do what they want to do. They are a wild animal. Ultimately, they do what they want. They're mischievous. They'll learn to pretend they like you so they can get what they want out of you. But when they decide, they're going to do what they want to do. They can look so sweet and innocent, but they have a mind of their own, and they're going to do what they want to do, no matter what you think that you've trained them to do. They've got an ulterior motive. They'll take a free lunch from you as long as they can get it. And when they're not getting that free lunch, you're going to find out their true character. They're rebellious at heart. They're mischievous. They're not something that can be trusted, even though many people... And the best thing that can happen if you have it for a pet, and this probably has happened when I've had them for a pet, this is what happens when they get bigger, they run off. You can be thankful that they just ran off, because they could do a whole lot of damage to you if they choose to. But thankfully, most of the time, they do just run off when you have... They're mischievous. They can't be trusted. They're rebellious. They can be trained to an extent, but then they will do what they want to do, just like a lot of people I know. They'll go along with the crowd. They'll go along with what they want you to, what you expect of them until they're left on their own. And then one other thing, and then we're going to look at a Bible character, and we'll leave these five things up here. They have a strong social structure. This is something that kind of surprised me. In fact, nobody really understood this until about 20 or 30 years ago as people were doing studies. They previously thought that these are just solitary animals that just kind of wander off on their own. But they have a total, a complete class system. As they grow older, the young adult raccoons, for example, they kind of group together and segregate as males and females. They have sororities and fraternities, and all the males will kind of live together in a bachelor pad, I guess, and they live that way as young adults, and they kind of are that way most of the year except for mating season. Then the males kind of go off on their own and try to find where all the females try to crash the females' apartments and look for them. But they have a unique social structure that a lot of people didn't really know till fairly recently. And there's a in the females, of course, take care of the kits or the cubs, the baby raccoons. That's the woman's job. The man just kind of leaves them up to the care, leaves the women in charge of caring for them. They got, you know, more important things to do. They got to go out and sit in their apartment and watch football games and drink beer, I guess, all afternoon. And, you know, they have a good time together. And but they have a very strong social and family ties. Which, by the way, family ties can be very detrimental. And I wish some... I just kind of... This is just something that I guess we sometimes assume that everybody's like us in this matter. But reality is, it'd be good if our spiritual ties ran as deep as our family ties. Now, I grew up in a large family, and I didn't realize that we were unique. I mean, 13 kids was all I ever knew. I didn't know that was unique. When I said, you're from a large family, I don't know, I got 8 brothers and 4 sisters. You call that a large family? I used to wonder sometimes, I think I said this at my wife's father's funeral, that I used to wonder what it would like to be like to be in a small family with just 5 or 6 kids. But I didn't know. That's just something that I grew up in and didn't know any different. I didn't know how unique my family was growing up. And then when I got saved and being in a situation where if I'm going to follow Jesus, I'm going to face the total rejection of my family. To me, it was a no-brainer decision. I didn't realize how unique I am in thinking that way. Most people won't trust Jesus if they're afraid somebody might make fun of them. Or their and my church family means multiple times more to me than my literal blood family, or whatever you want to say it. But most people are not that way. Well, it's my kinfolk you're talking about. Well, bless God, if they're lost or backslidden, I'd rather be with God's people. I mean, that's kind of unique, and I know that some folks, they don't understand that completely, but that's just something that, but they do have a very strong social structure that sometimes can, and a lot of animals do that, and it can be something that's very detrimental. In fact, I can think of a few that are kind of the opposite, that maybe I'd identify more with them. But we're going to talk about a character tonight in the Bible that I identify, that I think of immediately when I think of a raccoon. To me, the biggest thing about a raccoon, and these are kind of in order, they're sneaky, they're deceitful, they're ingenious, they have a great deal of initiative, they adapt They look for great for opportunities to better themselves or to lift themselves up to further themselves. And they're mischievous. They're rebellious. You can't trust them completely. And they have a strong social structure. Now, I'm going to see if somebody can guess. I got a piece of candy up here that is waiting for you. Or I got a glass of water I can throw at you. Are you warm? I'm going to throw a glass of water if you get it first. But anyway, see if you can guess who I'm talking about here. I'm not going to put their name up there. I'm going to tell you some things. We're going to play Who Am I? All right. His brother, whose name was Abishai, went with David when David took King Saul's spear, and I'm going to say canteen, from him while he was sleeping. Abner was the guard of King Saul in 1 Samuel 26. He was David's nephew. David had a lot of nephews. let's see. He was the... we got somebody heads up here. He was the general of David's army. That might help. You got it? Joab. That's right. Here we go. All right. Ooh, these are good. These are hard candy. Don't break your teeth on them, all right? All right. Joab. We're going to look at Joab. His brother was Abishai, brother Abishai was David. He had three brothers, or two other brothers, I'm sorry, the three that we're going to talk about this evening. But when Saul and Jonathan were killed in battle, he was with David, and Abner was Saul's cousin in general. Abner was in battle with, if you remember back when Saul was chasing down David, and Saul and Jonathan were killed. Abner was the cousin of Saul and was Saul's general. He was in command when Saul was killed in battle. And Israel crowned, after Saul's death, in 2 Samuel, we're going to turn to a few verses in 2 Samuel and 1 Kings in a minute, when Israel crowned Ishbosheth, who was Saul's son, as the king. Of course, Jonathan was killed. He would have been the rightful heir to the throne, but Ishbosheth was crowned as the king of Israel by Abner. And Judah, the tribe of Judah, crowned David to be their king. And Joab was David's general in the battle. And the battle ensued between Israel under Abner and Judah under Joab and David. And Asahel pursues Abner in 2 Samuel chapter number 2. One of those things in 2 Samuel chapter number 2. I want to see some things about this man Joab. And to be quite honest with you, there's so many things that we could talk about Joab, and he's kind of one of those characters. Okay, is he a good guy or a bad guy? What is he? Which side is he on? Is he doing the right thing or is he doing the wrong thing? What's his motive? What's his? I think of him as a raccoon. You're not sure if you can trust him. The battle between Israel under General Abner and Judah with David's army under General Joab, and Asahel pursues Abner in 2 Samuel chapter number 2, and there was a very sore battle that day in verse number 17, and Abner was beaten and the men of Israel before the servants of David. Now, that's Abner is the enemy of David, Saul's cousin, and Saul's former general. And there were three sons of Zeruiah there. And these are this is Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. And Asahel was as light of foot as a wild roe. He could run faster than anybody else. And he pursued after Abner. And he was catching up to Abner. And Abner said, I've lost the battle. I'm going to live to fight another day. And Asahel pursued after Abner and is going, and he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, Art thou Asahel? And he said, I am. And Abner said to him, turn thee aside. Two different times he said, turn around. I don't want to kill you. I don't want to take your life. You're a young man. I could kill you in an instant, but I don't want to do that. You need to quit pursuing after me. But he refused. And verse number 23, he refused to turn. So Abner reluctantly, I won't read all the verses, but he reluctantly kills Asahel, who's the brother of Joab. And Joab said, okay, that's just a natural outcome of battle. But he didn't forget. You're messing with my family here. You're holding on to some. You're messing with my family. You're messing with me. Now, keep in mind, Asahel was wrong. And he could have turned back. And Abner tried to give him every chance he could. And finally, he ended up killing him reluctantly. Now, Abner later visits David. The losing general, King Saul's general, visits David and tries to patch things up as far as their relationship. David shows him kindness. David's more concerned about restoring the kingdom and making things right rather than showing revenge. But Joab has other plans. Joab is faithful to David, but he's got his own agenda. He's adaptive. He's an opportunist. He is sneaky. He's deceitful. In 2 Samuel chapter number 3, you go down to verse number 26. I'm just going to jump ahead to a couple of different verses here. Verse number chapter 3, I won't turn too far. Ooh, I've got pages sticking together. Chapter 3, verse number 26. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers to Abner. Joab had a meeting with David. David was showing kindness to Abner, trying to work with him. This is actually the second time Abner met with David. Joab was pretty upset, though he didn't want David to know about that. And now he meets with him again. And when he was leaving David, which brought him again from the well of Sirah, David knew it not. David didn't know what was going on. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly. Hey, buddy, come on over here. Let's talk this thing over. You were a general for my enemy. We're on the same team now. And I imagine that was somewhat of a friendly conversation. And then it says, and he smote him there under the fifth rib, and he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Joab had an ulterior motive. He was sneaky. He was deceitful. This isn't the last time he's going to do this. Joab's a hard man to figure out. We study him. He's like a raccoon. You're not really sure. Well, he's so deceitful. You're not sure if you can trust him. You're not sure if you can believe what he's telling you. Joab became a great, successful military leader, one of David's faithful warriors. A great compliment to David's army. He was loyal to David, maybe even to a fault. He was loyal to David. Remember when David committed adultery with Bathsheba? And Joab was out on the battlefield fighting David's battles that he should have been fighting. He was fighting for him. He was loyal to him. And of course, David tried to cover up the sin with Bathsheba by bringing Uriah home on a leave, and he refused to go see his wife. So David sent Uriah back to the battlefield with a message directly written to Joab and told Joab, and I think Joab put two and two together and figured out what was going on. So he conspired with David in this matter in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And God said, I want you to, in the heat of the battle, I want you to send Uriah out there with some men. And then I want everybody to turn around and leave Uriah out there. Put him in a spot where you know he's going to die. Now, Joab didn't question David. He was loyal to David. and did everything he said, even when it came to murdering a good man. And when David's son, Absalom, remember him? Amnon raped his sister, and Absalom murdered Amnon for his sin, and David refused to deal with him. And now Absalom, David's son, is a murderer, and David just kind of didn't deal with it, just let him flee. And Joab was the one that talked David into letting Absalom return to David. And then when Absalom rebelled, and you read the story, okay, which side is Joab going to be on? Well, I imagine this was a hard decision for him. Which would be the best opportunity for me, I'm thinking, was going through his mind. And Joab did remain faithful to David in this matter with Absalom. When Absalom rebelled, Joab stayed faithful to David. In fact, Joab was the one who led the charge where Absalom was killed, and rejoiced that Absalom was killed in trying to destroy David's kingdom. Now, because David gave the command when they went into the battle, I don't want you to kill my son, I don't want you to hurt my son, but Joab was glad to kill him. Joab, let's kill him, let's get rid of him. He was faithful to David, even going beyond what David expected of him. And then David, in his anger over Joab's rebellion, demotes Joab and puts Amasa, which is one of Joab's cousins, in his place. And in 2 Samuel chapter number 20, I'm going to jump up here, check 2 Samuel chapter 20, and we'll read just a section of this. I'm going to tell you kind of the story in a nutshell, and we see something about Joab again. Amasa was put in charge of David's army instead of Joab. And now another rebel arises named Sheba in 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse number 1. And there happened to be there a man of Belial whose name was Sheba, the son of Berechi, a Benjamite, who blew a trumpet and said, "We have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." He rose up an army against David. And David said, "We've got to do something about this man." Now, Amasa was in charge of David's army now. Joab was kind of on the sideline. He was still in the army, but he wasn't the man in charge. And he was a bit resentful about this. And in the heat of the battle, as Amasa was going after Sheba, that if we jump down to verse number 9, in 10, and Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health?" Joab came to Amasa as they were pursuing, he met with him. And notice how he approached him. He's his cousin. And Joab said to Amasa, "Art thou in health, my brother?" "Hey, buddy, it's good to see you. God bless you. Been praying for you. Hope you win the victory today." And he took Joab, and Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. That's kind of creepy, isn't it? But that was a greeting. It was showing the friendliness and the love, the companionship to them as he reaches out to his brother. He's kind of like a raccoon. You're not sure if you can trust him. He's a pet. He's doing things to his advantage. And Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. So Joab smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So Joab, again, pursues, and David, of all things, and it's David, you think he would learn by now, we can't trust this guy. He's a wild animal. We can't put any confidence in him. But instead, David restored his confidence to him. David trusted him. In fact, Joab actually later gave David some good advice that saved David from a lot of heartache and a lot of trouble down the line, though David had his share of trouble already. But then finally, on David's deathbed, he spoke of Joab. He looked over the life of Joab. While David was just before his death, now of course, he had already chosen. His son Solomon had been anointed to be the next king of Israel. But he had another son, who was the fourth son of David, named Adonijah. And Adonijah began to rise up and proclaim himself to be the rightful heir of the throne of David. Now, it's interesting. Here, Joab was faithful to David when his son rebelled against him. He was faithful to David when Sheba rose up against him. But now Joab sides not with David and Solomon, but with Adonijah. Joab sides with Adonijah now. And therefore David gives this dying advice to Solomon. Solomon, this guy's a raccoon. You can't trust him. You're not sure which side he's on. He's sneaky. He's deceitful. He's an opportunist. He'll take advantage of you. He'll use you. And then he'll destroy you. So David, on his deathbed, gives Solomon a great deal of things for advice. And one of the things he mentions in 1 Kings, if you go to 1 Kings, and we're just about done here, we look at Joab. 1 Kings chapter number 2. I turned too far. 1 Kings chapter number 2. As David is speaking to Solomon before Solomon takes the throne. In verse number 5 and 6, David says to Solomon, "Moreover, thou knowest also that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, and what he did to the two captains of the host of Israel, Abner, the son of Ner, and to Amasa, the son of Jether, reminded him how he murdered both of them, pretending to be their friend, took their life, whom he slew and shed the blood of war and peace, and put the blood of war upon his girdle and upon his loins and his shoes, and were on his feet. Do therefore according to thy wisdom, and let not his hoar head go down to the grave in peace." In other words, don't let him live to be an old man. Don't let him live out his life. Don't let his hair turn gray. Do what you need to do to him. Take care of him. So then, of course, as Solomon came to the throne, as Solomon was anointed king, he had to deal with a couple of things right away, and one of them was Joab. You go to chapter number 2 and down to verse number 28. In the middle part of the verse, it says, "And Joab fled." Word got out, Joab knew what was about to happen. Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and caught hold on the horns of the altar. And it was told King Solomon that Joab was fled into the tabernacle of the Lord. And behold, he is by the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaiah and said, Jehoiada, saying, "Go fall upon him, go kill him." And Benaiah came to the tabernacle of the Lord and said unto him, "Thus saith the king, come forth." And he said, "Nay, I will die here." And Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, "Thus saith Joab, and thus I can't kill him." Man, he's praying. He's talking to God. He's in the temple. We can't do something in the tabernacle. We can't do anything to him there. In verse number 31, and the king said unto him, "Do as he has said, and fall upon him, and bury him, that thou mayest take away the innocent blood which Joab shed from me and from the house of my father." You see, here's a picture of someone that cannot be trusted. And God said, "You need to deal with him. I know he's cute. He's cuddly looking." Sorry, Addie. You're cute and you're cuddly looking, but we're not going to slay you, all right? Somebody that can't be trusted, they're deceitful. They're mischievous. They're rebellious. They're looking to take advantage of everybody they can. They'll make you to think that they're on your side, but then one day they're going to turn on you before you knew what happened. And they're sneaky and deceitful. Boy, what a picture we have of this character of Joab. who was like a raccoon that had to be destroyed for the sake of the kingdom, because of his deceit, because of his treachery, because of his wanting to push his agenda rather than follow the king's orders. Father, we pray.